Good day, and welcome to the Q2 Results 2020 conference call. Today's conference is being recorded, and at this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Christoph Marx. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you, operator. Welcome everybody, and hello from our side, and thanks for joining us on our conference call for the Q2 results. I hope you had all the chance to see and read the information we published this morning, mainly our interim report for the second quarter, plus the corresponding press release. If not, they both can be found on our homepage, under the section Investor Relations, Financial Publications. At that section, you will always be able to find also the presentation we prepared for this call. And for that matter, we have gathered today our CFO, Heiner Dieffenbach, and as well as our COO, Michael Eberhardt, to give you some more details on the Q2 results and on the recent and future developments. With that being said, I would like to hand over to you, Michael.
Okay, Christoph, thanks a lot, and a warm welcome from my side as well to this analyst call. So, I have the pleasure to give you, let's say, a first update about the business, and then Heiner will lead us through the financial outlook. And then, I will close the call with, let's say, an outlook going forward, and then we have hopefully enough time for Q&As. So I'm now on page number 3 in our presentation. Overall, we can say, okay, Q2, what we have announced are very solid numbers. And the most important part for us was that these numbers are demonstrating that our strategy is totally highly accepted in the market from customers, but also from our partner, SAP, and even more from, let's say, a lot of the big system integrator and global system integrator around the world. So I think our model, our business model, our business strategy to move SNP towards a more software-oriented company, to do, let's say, to strengthen our approach in a more indirect go-to-market via partnership, is really paying off. And at the same time, I think we made good progress on a couple of items, like setting up a support model and also in accelerating our software growth. Even if we are moving more to a more recurring revenue model, which means, okay, we try to sell a good mix between software subscription and, let's say, project-oriented software licenses, which also gives us a huge recurring revenue related to the maintenance part. The second part on this slide is, we had a lot of very critical go-lives, active go-lives around the world, and we demonstrated that SNP is fully prepared for even for a time like COVID-19. All our business, or let's say the majority of our business, we can deliver remotely. That means our investments in digital transformation center really pays off, and also the people in the countries are most likely either in the office or in the home office, and they do all the work remotely with their customer using digital technology going forward. So that means everything is, let's say, in line with our expectation, highly accepted by the market, and we believe if we get COVID-19 under control and the economy will recover from, let's say, the big dip, we will see significantly growth on the SNP top line as well. So I go to the next slide. What was our biggest achievement in the first half of 2020? First of all, I think we had a good year, a good start in the year, as you could see in our Q1 performance. But we also did some very major step forward in Q2. For example, we signed a couple of new deals, and let me just echo the major one, which is the deal with All for One. This is, let's say, very significantly for us because it is a full subscription kind of model. It is an 8-year contract together with All for One to move their customer base and the customer base of the United Value Added Reseller organization, which are in total roughly something like  8,000-10,000 medium-sized customer for SAP towards S/4HANA. And this is delivered out of the center. This is very much, let's say, done by our Crystal Bridge software. They use our BlueField methodology, and it will be an ongoing service for the customer, let's say, depending on the customer contract, but the minimum contract will be 3 years, and the maximum contract could be up to 8 years. So And this is all on subscription. That means we offer the customer a full subscription model. And with this model, we move the customer to the new platform. We move him, if he would like to go to the cloud, we would move this customer to Microsoft Azure. We do, let's say, whatever is needed in preparation for this S4HANA move, for example, setting up the business partner organization and this kind of things. And we will optimize his landscape over the course of the next 3 to 8 years, depending on the contract length. So we also had a really higher order entry on the top line, and we increased our top line, as Heino will show you afterwards. We slightly improved our operating earnings, but at the same time, we set up in Q2 a really good program to do some significant cost savings primarily in G&A, so that we take costs out, which are not totally related to our top line growth and our innovation. Heiner will go more in detail to this program. We confirm our last guidance, which we have given to you, and I will echo this at the end of the presentation. We see that Corona is for sure a hit in the organization. We see a couple of, projects which are not signed, delayed, or customer even skipped them at that point of time. We have seen that programs and deals we have signed in Q1 and Q2, we signed the deals, but we never started the project because the customer had all his employees more or less on short-time work, very much in the automotive industry and in the manufacturing industry. So there is a hit, but we also see that Corona will help us to even fasten, accelerate the growth in digitalization on the one side. And what we see in the market is that there will be an increased number of merger and acquisitions and carve-outs at the same time. So there will be a lot of, focus on making the core stronger and get rid of whatever is not, core for you as a company. That means beside the S4HANA, we will see dominant growth in flexibilize the cost using the cloud going forward and to make your company more streamlined by either, get rid of non-core business or acquire, additional size, additional geography in your core business. So I think the market should not be the problem going forward for S&P. And then I think Heiner and the team, he made a good, in a very short timetable, they did a capital increase to really get enough capital in S&P so that we can fund our growth opportunities. And if there would be, 100%, companies which fits 100% to us, maybe even to grow partly inorganic, but without any compromise on the strategy. So with that, Heiner, I hand over to you.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. My name is Heiner Diefenbach. I'm the CFO of S&P, and welcome from my side to our Q2 result short telco. I would like now to jump on slide number 6. Key figures show significant improvements, and actually we are underlying with our numbers our journey from a service up to a software company, where we improved our software sales by 5 million, generating 68.7 million revenue stream in the first half. And this means we are now at a level of 28% of software sales, which I will show in details a little bit later. What you need to know is that our approach is slightly a change in one-time revenue recognition in the software arena up to more recurring and subscription-based models, like Michael just explained for the All-for-One partner deal. Despite the Corona crisis, our revenue strongly increased by 14% compared to the last year, which is, from my point of view, quite a good success. And we were able, despite the massive investments in the sales and partner arena, to reduce, like for like, our personal expenses. So therefore, we were able to show for the second quarter a positive EBITDA of 1.2 million, which results in a small negative net income of 0.9 million. About the investments, and based on that, I would like to switch to page 7 and talk about the service segment. We were able to improve our Q2 revenue stream by 2.8 million compared to last year in the sales arena for services, which means that for the first half we improved by 5.6 million and we massively improved our EBIT, which shows a profit of 400K. And this is based on increased utilization and, of course, as Michael just explained, on the improved cost structure situation. And I think what quite helped a lot is that our teams are really able to develop and deliver projects purely remotely, and this is quite helpful to keep the revenue stream up in the service arena. In the software arena, which you can see on slide 8, our improvement is even much better. We increased significantly in line, and we are now 28% of our total sales are really software driven. For example, last year it was only 21%, so this is quite good. We are also able to show some profits in this area. One of the reasons why it's slightly lower than last year is because we keep our investments up in the arenas where we believe it's really pushing our software segment. These are the arenas of research and development, so we do not reduce our investments in developing our software, and we are increasing our investments actually in the partner arena, in the indirect sales, because this really makes our software sales scalable, and that is quite important. Of course, we invest in partner support and in education of our own people. What has or how is our balance sheet look like on slide number 9? You can see we still have a very strong, from my point of view, strong, healthy balance sheet. We, as I explained last time, we are collecting cash in the area with the Kreditanstalt for Wiederaufbau, KfW. We collected 10 million cash in this area, and our equity ratio is now at 36%. And if you, for example, take the capital increase into the calculation, which we which gave us 28 million of new cash and equity, that means our equity ratio is now above the 45%, and this really creates a strong backbone on the cash side on one hand, and of course on the capital situation on the other. Talking about cash, you can see on slide 10 that our working capital management went well. Yeah, so we have almost no additional cash requirements, and that's despite the growing top line. We have operating cash flow in our first half year is significantly improved compared to last year. And I can maybe follow up later on the details, but I can assure you our focus really in the cash arena is focus on cash collection, on the working capital management, and of course on the cost reduction. And this overall should bring us and will bring us in a positive cash development throughout this year. So where are we with order entry and order backlog on slide 11? You can see we have a slight or almost same level compared to last year in Q2. That's despite the worldwide economic crisis. But anyway, based for the first half year, we are improving our order entry by 9%, which shows a 5 million order entry improvement in the software arena and a 3 million order entry improvement in the service area. And this generates us a strong backlog situation of over 100 million. And where, of course, the software segment more than doubled. And this is based on our big partner deals like IBM, T-Systems, All for One. And I think which is quite an important information is that based on the order entry, the S4HANA order entry part tripled up to almost a third of the entire order entry situation in the first half. I think before the closing remarks here, maybe we should have a look at slide 12 and just explain or say some few words about the capital increase, which happened on July 16. We issued 610,000 shares with the support of MindFirst and collected, based on the 46 euros per share, 28 billion of new cash. And this action really had a positive effect on our stock market liquidity because the we almost have 70% in the free float, which is quite good from our point of view. The whole capital increase was oversubscribed by more than 2.5. And now, as I explained before, we have a strengthened balance sheet. We have a good backbone on a cash position. And we have enough funds now for our future growth in organic and inorganic growth. And I think that really gives us a strong position for the future development of SNP, where Michael would finish now with the closing remarks. And before we do that, maybe you might have a look at slide 13, where you can see the relative performance of the S&P shares over this fiscal year already. And I think this is quite positive. And therefore, I would like to hand over to Michael again. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Heiner. Thanks a lot. So let me just summarize on slide number 15. So I said in my introduction that we will not change our last outlook. So our outlook is still that we will be, let's say, in minimum on last year revenue, achievement, but we see some upsides here. So our guidance is between 145 and 170 million on the group sales. And our EBIT margin will be, let's say, somewhere in the mid single digital area. What did we achieve? I think we focus on four areas. The first one is growth. When I look to our pipeline for H2 2020, but also for 2021, we see that, as I said before, our strategy really pays off, and we see an increased number of pipeline. We have significant pipeline in both areas, in the software side, which is the key area for us, but also on the services side. And what we really see significantly is that our partner focus is paying off, and this is also seen in the pipeline nearly on a worldwide level. So there's only a couple of, let's say, smaller areas where we need to adapt and we need to improve. One thing is, for example, we signed this IBM deal. We had some good successes together with IBM, but we did a couple of, let's say, improvements now in the Q2 in some regions to get a closer alignment with IBM. And we already see, let's say, that the closer alignment helps us to develop better opportunities together and get more visibility together in the market. Then Heiner gave an update about point number two, which is cost and cash. I will not go through that. What I can say is, okay, we have clearly agreed together to go for this cost saving on the one side without damaging innovation and growth. I think that's very important that point number one and point number three is, let's say, something we will not target for cost saving, but we target for acceleration and leading the market here. When I go to the innovation part, the most important part which I would like to echo here is we had this very unique cloud logistic program set up and organized together with Microsoft at that point of time. But this will be not only Microsoft, but we plan to do something like this with all of the hyperscaler. But we are leading today with Microsoft in this area. And this is all about to help customers to get more or less highly automated via the analyze phase and then, let's say, the deployment phase to the final cloud operation. We do this, let's say we use our normal Crystal Bridge analyze tool to understand exactly the customer's setup of his SAP system, the usage of the SAP system, the flow of, let's say, the data and the information, the interfaces, and whatever you need to know to make, let's say, a final decision, how you can transfer an existing SAP environment, a complex environment, to a cloud provider, to one of the, let's say, four, five hyperscaler in the world. If we have done this, so we understand exactly the customer, let's say, the customer as is situation in IT, we name it the current mode of operation. Then we have we have adapted the price list of Microsoft in our Crystal Bridge so that we can simulate, let's say, different scenario, how you need to optimize your SAP environments in terms of usability, availability, business recovery, and all these kind of things, how you can optimize, let's say, systems which need to be up and running 7 days, 24 hours compared to development systems and quality assurance systems, which you use, let's say, when you have a specific program or a specific project in place. So it's a more volatile kind of operation, which is for sure then the optimal picture for a cloud. And by optimizing this picture to, let's say, a fully cloud-tailored setup of your SAP systems, customers can achieve significantly commercial and flexibility values for their own business. If the customer then agreed, okay, we go now with option two because this is the best mix between commercial and let's say non-commercial values, for example, then we have we work and this is not totally finalized, but it's let's say in good progress. We work on a fully automated deployment of this scenario in the Microsoft cloud. And as I said, today it's Microsoft. Tomorrow it could be Amazon Web Service, Google, maybe even Alibaba and others. So this is really, let's say, gives us a significant way to differentiate because now we are able to serve all scenarios in a fully software-based, automated, centralized, factorized approach, which really gives us, let's say, efficiency on the one side, but gives the customer much better business outcome. Much more reliable, much more, let's say, you see upfront what you can expect at the end. And this leads me to point number four. We are known in the market as the safe pair of hands. And other companies are talking about the customer satisfaction. We talk about project success and success rate. So I'm now a year in this company. I do not say that all the projects are running without any escalation. So I'm right now in a big project on a big system integration company where we do their data transformation for them, for their own SAP system. And yes, I have weekly calls with the CFO of this company to get this program, let's say, managed in the right way. But at the end, we always made it. And at the end, it's, let's say, when we do our testing in the mass test number one, mass test number two, and we are successful in this testing, then we are also successful on the go live. And this is what I can say. All our go lives in the first half year, even if we need to go to, I would say, almost 100% remote management for all these go lives, we finalized at the end successful with very high customer satisfaction. And as I learned from Mac Whitman when I worked for HP, happy customers are buying more. I think that's a very good foundation for us to get, to be the partner for our customers, not only today, but tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. So the land and expand strategy will pay off, and we see this already today, because we have a lot of customers which are doing this kind of projects since years with S&P, and we are their partner for this kind of work. What we also have achieved is increased number of co-delivery projects together with our partners. We have now, we see, let's say, very different customer partner behaviors in terms of service expectation. We have customer, we have partners like IBM. They would like to go, let's say, within the next 12 months to a fully IBM-delivered kind of project, which they just use our software, and they use our, let's say, support, and they use our training, but they try and they will do everything possible to make their project by their own, which is totally in our interest because that's the only way how we can scale. Then we have other partners which are much more in this kind of co-delivery, so they do what they can do best. They do all of the process consulting. They do maybe some of the upfront programs together with our software. We train them to set up, for example, a business partner, this kind of things. But the most critical go live at the end, they just ask us to contribute this part and to be a part of their delivery organization related to this specific customer project. And then we have smaller companies, smaller partners, which are totally, let's say, clear. They acquire our software. They use us as a end-to-end for all the data transformation, and they focus on the business transformation. So how can I optimize the customer processes? How do I get, let's say, the new SAP modules integrated, the additional, let's say, things like Ariba, the SuccessFactors, and so on. But as soon as it comes to data transformation, we are the partner of the choice. And we will do this in a subcontracting mode or in a parallel mode directly with their customer. So all of these opportunities are possible. As I said, there is a pattern. The bigger ones are going more for own delivery, and the smaller ones are going more for the subcontractor area. But the mix of both is really, let's say, helpful for us because this is exactly what we can do best and how we can scale the company going forward. So with that, Christoph, I give it back to you.
Yes, thank you, Michael. Thanks also, Heiner, for the explanations of Q2. And I think, operator, we are now open for Q&A.
And if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on the phone line will indicate when your line is open, and please state your name before posing your question. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question, and we will take our first. Please go ahead.
Operator, I think you have to either open the line or...
Their line is open. Please check your mute function.
Okay, I think it's my line. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my question. The first one is with regard to the capacity utilization of the consulting staff in the second quarter, and what do you expect to see in the second half of the year? In your presentation, you mentioned a rather strong pipeline for the second half of the year. How much is your business pipeline higher as compared to 1 year ago? And the third question is with regard to your cost savings program. What are the targeted savings for the current year?
Okay, let me just start with the utilization part. In Q2, we had already, let's say, some challenges in utilization because we had some slippages in the project. So it was different in the regions. Let's say there's not one number. We need to look at 6 different regions, but overall it was roughly, let's say, in the size of around 60%. In Q3, we have seen specific in Central Europe a further delay of some of the projects, which, as I said, we can deliver most of the projects remotely, but, for example, we had in some of the OEMs, we had projects signed, but we could not start the program because one of the partners was, let's say, had four days short time work for the project team on his side. So what we did is we adapted our capacity slightly, not by, let's say, taking too much people out. We took, let's say, something like 10, 15 people out in the U.S., which are not fitting to the future. So we said we will not remove any resources, any capacity which is fit for purpose. But what we will use the time to adapt where we need to adapt most likely, let's say, cost or related to the skills we have still in the organization. We went in Germany, for example, we use 80%, we use a one day short time work right now, so the people are, most of the people are not working Fridays in our delivery organization to adapt, let's say, the supply to the demand. So our expectation is in the service organization that we will see, let's say, something like 55 to 60% utilization in almost all regions. And what we did is we stopped hiring at that point of time, but we see let's say in Q4 already we have a process which gives us the backlog. Then we look at the pipeline. Then we look at the committed deals. Then we look at the deals above 50% probability, and then the deals below 50% probability. We believe in Q3 we will fly, let's say, overall with an utilization between 55 and 62%, something like this. But in Q4 we should come above the 70% again. This is the plan behind our let's say forecast and outlook as of today. The pipeline is there, so that's the second or the third question you ask. We have a significant increased pipeline in all regions. The pipeline increase compared to last year is something like 25% higher pipeline, which is, let's say, and we had a very good second half year, as you know, last year already, so we are 25% above that. And when I look to Q4, it's even more. In Q4, we have roughly 40% more pipeline compared to last year. So that means we see the pipeline developing, and as I said, we are increasing overall, but we are very good in the partner area. We have more partners, but also existing partners are contributing more. So that means the unknown is really COVID-19. We cannot say that COVID-19 is not, let's say, visible at all. We see this, let's say, it needs some more time to get a decision on the customer side. But we adapt as possible, as much as possible, our resource behind it. So pipeline is there. The conversion from, let's say, pipeline to order entry, and then the conversion from order entry to revenue is the challenge caused by COVID-19. And then the last one, cost saving, Heiner, I think I hand this over to you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, the cost saving is a good question. It's tough to answer because it is the question compared to what, yeah, but to the current run rate, what our plan is really reduce the cost by 1.5 million on a monthly basis, which brings you up to slightly above 10 million cost savings throughout the year.
But that is a rather significant amount.
Does that answer
your question? But that's a rather significant amount. Do you plan to lay off people? Or?
No, that's exactly what we not plan and what we do not want to do. But what we are doing really to reduce the costs are efficiency improvements, that we stop a lot of our external spends, for example. This is drastically reduced, also for cash reasons, of course. And we stopped hiring, as Michael just explained. And overall, this will give us a saving of 10 million,
And I think, Heiner, we can say we had a little bit of a discipline problem in terms of external consultants. We had too much external consultants all away in the company, and we really, Heiner did a fantastic job here in this area. We really closed the door here, we closed the gate, and we moved out most of the external consultants forced our team to deliver this by their own. And as of today, I would say this is flying. So it was, let's say, it was not that we need this consulting. I think it was a little bit, as I said, a question of spending discipline.
Okay, and how much external consultants have you sent off? Just to give a kind of ballpark number.
In terms of dollar, I think, Heiner, you can make this number. Huh?
Yeah, it's roughly spoken, 800K on a monthly basis.
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Which is significant, it's half of our cost saving. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Did we answer all the questions? I could not remember all four. I think this was the four, right?
Everything was answered. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
And we will take our next question. Please go ahead.
Yes, hello. This is Johannes Ries from Opus Capital. Maybe coming back to the new offering or the additional offering with Microsoft, Amazon Web Services, and so on. Only to have a feeling to automate the move to the cloud. What additional revenue potential is maybe in the longer term open with this? Is it a lot on top, or is it only an add-on to your traditional product? Only have a feeling how important this is.
It is. I would say this is significant. When you look to our, let's say, the three main pillar for the next 7-8 years is S/4HANA upgrade. So the move from SAP ECC to S/4, that's one. And I would say this is maybe, let's say, this is in total a very big one, because with this S/4HANA move, you will see that a lot of this business will not only move to the new platform, but also from an on-premise, from an outsourcing model to an cloud model. So that's, therefore, I think this is something which is also mixing up between. Yeah. The second part is for sure move to the cloud. When I just was yesterday on a Gartner call, where Gartner gave an update to the executives about, okay, how does the IT spend look like after the COVID crisis? And this was, they did, let's say, hundreds of customer interviews about what will be, let's say, the next 4 or 5 years, where do the customers spend. The cloud spending, flexibilizing your costs, getting, let's say, pay as you consume, and being less depending on single resources, because a lot of customers recognize they were not ready for a crisis like COVID, because they had too much dependencies on single resources, on people which cannot, let's say, access a data center remotely, because and this kind of things. So there are significant drivers behind the move to the cloud, to get, let's say, things with better commercials, to get it highly automated, to get it, let's say, less depending from single, let's say, critical resource, this kind of things. This will be in a significant amount. And why do I believe that we as S&P can be a major player? I think we all know, and this is not, let's say, publicly told very often, but it's very clear. A one-to-one move, when you take an SAP system as it is today, and you just bring it one-to-one to the cloud, I would say in 95% of the cases, your cost will explode, but you will not see any cost savings. That means to move something from, let's say, a own data center or an outsourcing model to the cloud, you need to optimize the landscape towards, let's say, the way how you consume. It is a difference if I have a system which is 7-day, 24-hour needed, always on, or if I access a system which I only need for a quarter end, or systems which I only need, let's say, during the night, for example, or systems which I only need during the day because it is, let's say, based on a project, for example, a development system, something like this. The way how you consume is different, and this means you need to construct and design your systems also in a different way. And therefore, and for this case, our Crystal Bridge is the optimal tool, the optimal software to do analysis, the solutioning at the end, and then the deployment in the cloud. So I would say cloud is maybe 80% or up to 80% compared to S/4HANA. And then you will see, let's say, the carve out and the merge will, I guess, after COVID-19, you will see more carve outs and more merge. Companies are even more forced to look to their core and to focus on their core strengths. So I personally believe this is maybe when you take this all together, three, for example, I would say it is 1.5 is maybe S/4, and then the other 1.5 is cloud and merchant acquisition in the same way. And then we have other stuff like, for example, systems consolidation, systems harmonization, and so on, data optimization, data archiving. But it's all about data and digitalization of the customer's data.
Well, clear, super comprehensive answer. Another question to your partner network. How it looks the pipes there? You discussed in earlier calls that you are in discussion with other guys, European guys. There have been, for example, discussions with a couple of Capgemini or Atos, or with another with a big American guy, a big Indian guy. How are the discussions going? Has gone on this front? Because you are not maybe where you want to be in the end with your partner system.
No, we are, and on the end, we are, let me say it this way, I hoped to announce today a big deal with one of the big system integrators, and this deal is hourly committed, so this will be a deal in the lowest double digital million area, so it's significant for us. We have the oral commitment, we have already, let's say, the biggest amount of signatures on the contract, but it's not finally, we do not have the finally signed deal here, therefore we could not announce it publicly, but there will be coming something soon, I guess, latest, let's say, by the end of August, hopefully sooner. So this will be a next big one, which is really important for us, and then with the name you go, with one or two of the name you just mentioned, we are far, let's say, in negotiation, and we will close something, I guess, in Q3. So what we see, and this is for me, maybe, and I make this public, we have even somebody who was, let's say, more on our, who had already an agreement with one of our competitors. They turned around and said, okay, I think we made a mistake, and we are in very deep discussion with them on an NDA. Therefore, I cannot give you the name, but I think the partner model is really paying off in a very good way. If I look to the total pipeline, let me just look in parallel to the system. So we have today more than one time the revenue in the pipe for the rest of the year, which is I would say this is a multiplier of three compared to last year in the partner area, and this is we talk about. We have IBM, we do a lot of voting with Accenture, we do something with Atos, we do something with, let's say, smaller companies like MHP. We have deals with Cognizant, we have deals with HCL and Tech Mahindra. One thing what I can say is we do not try to copy always the IBM part. What I said before, and Heino is pushing us here very hard. We need to go to a more recurring revenue kind of model. That's yep. Also my clear target. That means we try to get an agreement, let's say in the software, to have a kind of subscription kind of model with the partner, and therefore you will see maybe good order entry, but at the end the revenue will come, let's say, over the time. And then also our relation to SAP is develops really in a very great way. So the hyperscaler relation is really super. We have a very good relation to Microsoft, starts very good discussion with Amazon Web Service. We only transferred three or four companies in Latin America to Amazon Web Service together with Amazon Web Service. So I think, compared to, we are now 1 year in the strategy, we really make good progress. The challenge is when we sign the deal, but then we need to make it happen. So I personally spent in minimum 20% of my time still to get this IBM deal up and running across all areas. My first call Monday morning is with the head of IBM here in Germany, with Gregor Pillen. Then I have weekly calls with Keith Casello, who is the SAP leader for IBM, but as I said, we really make good progress here. But it's not a walk in the park.
But sounds good. Maybe only to remind us, when you think you can achieve maybe a software revenue of maybe 45-50%, and how big could be the recurring part in the longer term? You think to have a feeling what you think is the target here you are able to achieve.
It depends how long you will say long. When you talk about, let's say, something like 2025, I would say our software business can be 70% of the company
of the company, let's say revenue. But this has a couple of things. First of all, as I said, partners are behaving totally different. When we go primarily with the big partners, I think the revenue will go more and more to the partners, and the software will be, let's say, distributed via their channel. When I go to smaller companies, we will still deliver. So we will grow in services as well, but our focus is for sure the software, because we can only scale via the software. That's for sure. And you see, this is exactly how it works today. We do not have, let's say, any deals anymore where we do, let's say, a pure service deal. It's always software and service. Yeah? And I think that's the most important part. The second part is we need to get, let's say, and this is the part of innovation. Today, for example, our analysis tool is excellent. This is the best in the market. And I would even bet with you that SAP, without any, let's say, other enforcements, they would confirm this one. But then we have the analysis. Where we push Andreas and our R&D team is to get, let's say, the knowledge of the consultants as part of the software. So one of the debate with IBM, for example, is, okay, now we have done this analysis. Great. We see everything, how this customer works today. That is really super. And now? And then that means we need to get more business intelligence in our software to make a real, based on historical, let's say, pattern to suggest, let's say, different solutions or possible solution scenarios, so that you get, let's say, more BI intelligence in our software. And this will help, let's say, to set up a partner much faster, because today we see the lack of, they understand the analysis, but they don't understand, okay, what do I do now with this analysis? What are the treatment? And this is where we come in with our, let's say, with our 25 years of experience, always in this area. This is easy with a consultant, with an SAP consultant who is 20 years in the market. But when you look to how IBM or Accenture or others operate, they operate with, let's say, all this offshore, nearshore center in India. And when you look to all this attrition, what you see there, they do not have so much of this kind of people, senior people, which can do that. That means we need to get this, let's say, also more software-based and more supported by BI. This is the next innovation part we look at, and I guess we will invest money to be better there.
Very clear. And the recurring part of the business, how big it could be maybe in 2025?
I know. I give it to you, because you are tracking this closer than I do.
Our current recurring revenue stream is 15%, and I guess in 2025 we should be up maybe to 50%. Yeah.
Okay, well, that sounds good. It's a really short question. Even. Yeah, sorry.
Hmm? Yeah, it depends how you put out the definition of recurring revenue. That's maybe we can take and talk about this next time. But from my point of view, for example, deals with Alpha One and so keep going through the Alpha One. It is, from my point of view, of course, recurring revenue. Yeah, and then we would like to acquire software companies where we, after our successful project, we stay longer with the client in a client situation and generate out of this also recurring revenue. So I think we should aim for 50%. Yeah.
Okay, super. A very last short question. How much maybe less travel and less maybe trade fairs and so participation has also helped on the cost side, and what would stay longer term on this cost you have been able to reduce because of these external factors?
Yeah. So we have on a monthly basis cost reductions in the travel arena of 250,000 to 300,000. Yeah, it went almost down to zero, which from my point of view is, from a cost saving point of view, is maybe good, but from a client relationship point of view, I don't think this is good. So I guess we will see 60% or 70% of the travel costs in the near future again.
Okay.
So it will go up, of course, yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
And we will take our next question. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, Lucas Spang talking. Good afternoon, gentlemen. One short follow-up question on the hyperscale topic. Mr. Eberhardt, in the last call you mentioned negotiations with a hyperscaler, and now you talked a lot about Microsoft and also Amazon. So will we see also there in the future closer partnerships and fixed announcements, or was what can we expect there?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So and with Microsoft, we already, let's say, very much progressed on this area. We do, let's say, a couple of minimal viable products for new innovations. We do a lot of POCs together. We have selected customers together. So, yep, you could see, I think, with all three, with Microsoft for sure, we are let's say ahead of the other ones, but with Microsoft we will do something bigger one. This is but you know, to do an announcement together with an American company needs some time, but yes, this will happen. With Amazon we do, let's say, a lot of deals already, and we started the negotiation. The Amazon organization is a little bit more complex in this environment because they do not have a platform or responsible guy in their organization, which takes it all for, let's say, around the world. We have for 6-7 people we are talking right now, but we make good progress, let's say, on a day-to-day deal-by-deal case. And then we have already this smaller announcement with Google, what you see. But what I can tell you is a lot of the big companies also here in Central Europe have today, let's say, are in discussion with us and Microsoft and Amazon to move their SAP systems or all their systems to the cloud. And these are not the small, let's say, MDAX or SDAX company or mid-sized companies. They are also in this area, but this is very much, let's say, the big ones. You should not be surprised when you look to, let's say, in the press in the next six months, you will see a lot of movements and much closer partnerships between companies like, for example, Siemens and somebody else, and so on and so on. As you have seen, let's say, I think 2 weeks ago with this Teamcenter and SAP and Siemens, what they do together, you see, I guess, similar things with hyperscaler. So this cloud, when you look to this Microsoft part, it is not only interesting because you move it to something to the cloud. It is when you move to the cloud, you can use, let's say, Power BI much easier. You have a lot of microservices which you can use. It makes the way how you do a software programming, how you develop your own software as a company, even the software you use for your products, this makes the development cycle much shorter. That means these are really strategic decisions at the end. Yeah, and yes, we are in the middle of that one. So we do some let's say final statement, and I hope that we can give a good announcement before the year end.
Okay, great. And then, again, on your capital increase, you both mentioned also the M&A topic and 28 million and also the cost savings and the 10 million from the KfW bank. So you have a lot of money, and then you have over 20 million on cash and at the end of June. So do you have a closer look on possible M&A targets right now?
Actually, we set up kind of workshops with Michael Eberhardt also, of course, to figure out in which kind of area we should make the next acquisitions for. And that's something which needs to develop over time, and of course we need some time to do so. Yeah, so it's quite an early stage at the moment. But we took the opportunity to fill up our cash positions to be ready whenever there is a good opportunity.
But we also had a very clear agreement, Heiner and myself at least, we totally agreed that we will not do any compromise. So we will not acquire something just to give the company a different size. We rather think about how can we streamline this company even more. But if we would, let's say, see a target which is exactly in our strategic view and are and a real natural fit, we would go for that, yes.
Okay, so probably something like in the IT software area.
Something in the IT software area, something which is maybe doing the same as we do, but not for SAP, but will give us a broader view, let's say more access to the same customers, or a software which is maybe not, let's say, on the data side as we are, but on the process side, but then attached to SAP, for example, so that we can offer a broader software portfolio to the same partners where we talk to. Then we have, let's say, a huge synergy part, and we serve the same, let's say, channel, and we are still, let's say, in the big ecosystem of SAP. We would not acquire, for example, a business process consulting company, because we said, okay, business process consulting is the responsibility of our partners. If we would do that, for example, we would be immediately in a channel conflict with all our partners. Then this would disturb more compared to supporting our growth.
And what volume would you like to take in the hand to buy something?
I know. I think we talked about that. I would say when it is based on IP. And it's a strong IP, something with which, let's say, very small, with 5 million could make sense, but this is not our primarily. I would say everything between 20 and 50 million would be, let's say, would be something which really brings us forward. As long, and again, I'm on the one side, I'm a friend of M&A. On the other side, when I worked for HP 11 years, M&A could be also a big nightmare at the end. That means this is something you need to consider, and before we do it, we need to be very clear that this really, let's say, gives us a honest acceleration in our core.
Yeah, it's not so easy to answer because it depends. If you, for example, buy a software company with which a lot of recurring revenue is quite expensive. So, and I think most important, it needs to fit, and it needs to be a good prognosis that we can integrate that into our organization.
Yes.
I think these are the two main areas, and of course we are looking for recurring revenue and how to generate long-living client relationships. These are the areas we are looking for.
Yeah. Okay. And then last question on the order backlog. Just a question for clarification. If I do the math and take the order backlog of 106.2 million at the end of March and add the 45.1 million order income in Q3 and then reduce it by the revenue you made in Q3 of 34.3 million, I would end up with a number of 170 million for the order backlog. But you now give a number of 102.7 for the order backlog end of June. So there's a significantly lower number you gave. Is this due to cancellations, or did you change something in your order recognitions in the past, or what is behind this?
It's a good point. What we did is because of the S/4HANA transformation we did internally, we figure out that there were some projects where we, for example, a T&M project with an expected order entry, that these were closed, clients were closed, and therefore we took it out of the system. So it's a kind of a quality check we did so far.
But there was also a couple of learnings. So we had, I think it was, let's say, we cleaned up our books once with this S/4HANA transformation. That's one part. And then the second part is we also identified a couple of process issues in the company. One is exactly what Heiner said. We had a couple of stranded revenues in time and material projects, which is a problem of the project management and account management in the organization. This is in my responsibility. We need to fix this one. We have already taken action for that. This will not happen anymore. But you are totally right. And I'm really, let's say, I had exactly the same question to Heiner 3 weeks ago, and then we went through that together. But yes, we had let's say something like 5 to 7 million backlog in our organization, which was not converted to revenue at the end, and therefore we booked it out. But we will take action that this will not happen again.
Yeah. Okay. Then thanks for clarification and thanks for the answers.
And we will take our next question. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello to all of you. My name is Thomas Kaiser, a private investor. My question is if you can give us some more color about your progress in the transformation business in terms of M&A business. You wanted to get more business in this area with new partners. Did you make progress in this?
Okay, specific on M&A, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay, so I give you a couple of examples. We offered, let's say, together with Accenture, three big opportunities in the M&A market. One was with Airbus here in Europe. One was with a big production company in UK. We did with IBM, for example, a big deal also with Airbus, but in Canada. You know that Airbus has bought this Bombardier business, and this is for example one of the projects which is not decided because Airbus is, let's say, under big pressure. I think you have maybe seen the message today that they get only an order of a handful of planes in July. So we see this kind of thing still delaying. But what we see is overall we started a program with M&A Viewer and M&A. Heiner, do you know the name? Remember the name M&A Review and M&A. There are two service companies out which are, let's say, have a good overview about the M&A deals happening in the future. And we did some investigation about the pipeline. We started a program together so that we get a better visibility. We started a program with private equity in UK, for example, as a pilot in this area. And we have a significant amount of M&A discussion right now with several customers in preparation, which means, okay, customers are calling us and said, hey, we would like to split our SAP systems between the different business units. One of the big projects which we hope we close soon is, for example, with a big utility here in Germany. And you know what happens here with RWE and with E.ON, and we are in the middle of this conversation. And I just went from a call before I joined this call here with a company who said, hey, we would like to buy the software for the next 5 years, but I would like to get a flat rate for all the M&As we will do in the next 5 years. So that means this is really, let's say, this merger and acquisition is a topic in almost all discussion we have today.
Okay, and what is what do you do with your big partners, with IBM and Accenture in that area of M&A? Do you have business with them in that area?
Yes, what we do with IBM right now, this was one of the disappointments with IBM. We started already, I think, 3 months ago to start an M&A campaign. This is something which will go out now in August, but it was planned to go out by middle of June. So we are roughly 2 months later. And this was, we underestimated the complexity of IBM to get something like this approved. So we do M&A campaigns, for their customer base. This would be this case, for example, with IBM, will be an IBM campaign. But powered with S&P Bluefield. That means we are the Intel Insight for this M&A. And this is all about, demonstrating to the IBM customer that whenever they have, an M&A in their pipeline, that we are the partner, we are the right partner for them to make this, fast, high value, and very secured. So there's a clear value discussion behind it. As soon as we have this campaign launched,
I think, Kumar, Christoph, maybe you can send out to this team here an information so that we can link this. So this is done with IBM. With Accenture, we are in a broader discussion, but M&A is part of this discussion, but not, the primarily one. That means we discuss much more, let's say, how can we even build up joint transformation centers with a partner like Accenture, for example. But again, this is, in a discussion mode, so not ready to announce right now.
Okay, and last question. I've seen a white paper from you with Gartner in the field of M&A. Can we likely see a new partnership or collaboration with Gartner in some way?
No, what we did is Gartner is, let's say, Gartner. You can collaborate with Gartner, and this is what we do. Collaboration is good. Gartner takes care that they get always a very neutral picture. That means you cannot buy Gartner and say, hey, we do a study together, and at the end the outcome needs to be okay. S&P is the best. This will not work. Mm-hmm. But what you can do is Gartner is releasing, let's say, every day a lot of white papers for different IT topics and different, let's say, topics around the world. It's not only IT. And what we have is we have a collaboration with Gartner in a couple of areas where we can do, let's say, co-branding on different articles. And M&A is one of this area where we are working closely together. But whatever is written there, it is a Gartner paper. It is, let's say, co-branded with us. So we use this for marketing purpose and this kind of things. But for example, if we would say, this could be that in this paper, there is even a criticism for S&P. So we cannot influence the content.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Because Gartner lists from the neutrality, from the neutral, let's say, and the neutral view. They are not, they always take a different, a good distance to all the suppliers so that they don't lose their neutral view. That's their value when they go in front of their CIOs, CFOs, chief digital officer, and so on.
Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And we will take our next question. Please go ahead.
Okay, wonderful. This is Felix Herman from Warburg Research. It could be the case that I'm in the queue for more than one question. Just ignore the other one due to technical problems. I have a couple of questions regarding your partner business. As we might have, let's say, hundreds, even thousands of SAP implementers around the world, how do you make sure that every one of them is knowing about S&P and at least knows the offering of S&P or considers to take the S&P offering into his portfolio? And a linked question to this is, what is the downside for someone like, let's say, All for One, for local champions in France and Switzerland or whatever country, to take your software into their offering? Why do they not doing it? What's the most famous argument for not putting your software as an option for the client on the list?
Okay, let me answer question number one first. When you look to, let's say, we are today 150 million in size. When you look to, let's say, our brand awareness, I think we do a lot in brand awareness around the world. This Gartner discussion is just one part of that. Then we have two very strong brands. I think the B-side S&P, Bluefield and Crystal Bridge are very strong brands in the market. So when you look to Heiner, I think you said, okay, Heiner had just a conversation with one of our competitors, and this competitor mentioned that he is surprised how often a customer is, asking for a Bluefield solution in the RFP. So what we do is we do this branding. We are highly connected to SAP. We do a lot of analyst call and sourcing provider calls and demonstrate to them what is the value of S&P, what is the value of Bluefield, what is the value of Crystal Bridge. So we make this visible. Then we occupy, in Gartner, there is a magic quadrant. When you look to this magic quadrant, there's one magic quadrant for S4. The most important partners in the S4 environment today, the leading partners is Deloitte, Accenture,
and IBM. And with all three of them, we have, let's say, a close contact, and we hopefully will do something like a close partnership. With IBM, we have already done. With Accenture, we are close, and with Deloitte, we have a different country-by-country strategy, because this is a partner organization where it's hard to get a global agreement. You need to do it, let's say, region or country by country. So that is that we do everything to make S&P brand as best as possible. Reference selling, events, being part, dominant part of the Sapphire and SAP, having, let's say, a very good social network, let's say, communication and branding strategy. All these kind of things we are doing to make make us more visible. Why is not everybody working with us? Yeah, because there are competition out which have also, let's say, a solution. I would say not in the same quality and in the same, let's say, maturity as we are, but they are relevant. One of the biggest. I think the All for Ones and the Intelligence and the All for Ones in France, it is really has a lot to do with your question number one. How do you do they know us? And I would say we are very well known in Central Europe. We are good known in the US, but we are not everywhere known in the market. But we get better every day. The second part is then I think the biggest enemy what I see right now is not, let's say, that we are not known in the market. The biggest enemy is that companies like IBM, Accenture, the Indian ones, they are still on the model, which means if I can utilize more people and I do not use, let's say, a software-based automation, a centralized, a factorized, let's say, part, the model is still we need to utilize 400,000 people in India. And by utilizing more people in India, we will make a bigger business because we buy labor very cheap and we sell it very expensive. And that is our model. So this is a model change. And the positive part is, at least in some of the big ones, I get the feedback that the labor arbitrage model will not work in the future anymore. You need to offer more software-based automation, robotics. You need to efficiency and safe pair of hands is really, let's say, very critical to them. And when you go to a labor arbitrage model, I worked a couple of years in this model myself. I built up a couple of centers also, let's say, deeply involved in HP, for example. This is, let's say, very tough to do a labor arbitrage model and high quality at the same time. So that means our model to get this automated via software-based solution, highly standardized, highly, let's say, centralized and factorized so that you can deliver this out of a factory, this is a transformation itself. That means we are not only transforming, let's say, the customer's business, we are also transforming the IT business at the same time. And this is, let's say, the challenge with our partner strategy. But I guess on the long term, you will see the payoff.
Okay, wonderful. How was the looking at All for One? How long did you talk to All for One until they were signing a contract with you? And it seems to me a very elaborated thing you do with All for One from both sides. How long did it take? When did you first talk to All for One? And what did trigger All for One to do it finally?
That's a very good question. I can give you, let's say, when the first conversation with All for One was maybe already before I joined the company, so longer than 12 months ago. But this was, let's say, a very, frequently and not really, let's say, a planned kind of discussion. We signed this deal, I think, Heinop, I think it's fair to say within 3 months, something like this?
Yeah. That's right.
So with 3 months, roughly, we did this deal. And what is the purpose? Why did they choose us? I echo what Lars Landwehrkamp, the CEO, told SAP in a meeting with the head of SAP Germany, the old head of SAP Germany, Dr. Holz. I was part of this meeting. He said, we have chosen S&P because S&P is the best software model. It's a software company. So this is a real software we can sell to the customer. We have also seen that this software is the only one which is highly integrated for all scenarios. And we can use this software in a factorized approach, because we will build up for them something like a DTC, a digital transformation center in Poland. So we will copy what we have ourselves, and we will build up the same, let's say, in a shared mode with them. And then he said, okay, for us it's important not to have a different, a couple of softwares we need to use, depending on in which scenario we are just in, because this is so hard to keep our people up and running and skilled for, let's say, a different tool set. This fully integrated picture with the mission control in our Crystal Bridge, which gives us the opportunity to use in the future even less trained people to use the software, and also, let's say, the commitment that we will do more in this business intelligence area was let's say the competitive advantage we could demonstrate compared to all the competition. They also talked to companies like DataWard and CBS, but they recognized the only company in this area, in the data migration area, which has real software, a software with software management, with product management, with, let's say, lifecycle management, with a support model behind this, with a maintenance model behind this, is S&P.
Okay. Wonderful. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we will take our next question. Please go
Christoph,
ahead.
I think we are much over the time, or did I have a wrong time in my calendar?
I think maybe, operator, we take this last one question, and then I think we have to, you know, conclude it.
Hello, my name is Frederick. My name is Frederick Justice, and my question has already been answered. I have the question regarding to your business mode, or let's say economic mode, but you just described it perfectly. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I think thank you very much. I think this shows that that there's a lot of interest in the business, and we very much appreciate this. We're still available, of course, also after this call, so Investor Relations is more than happy to answer the questions that are still open right now. Sorry that we have to close it. Maybe there are some questions, but you can always contact us, and we'll take care of it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Thank you.
And this concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect.